socks on my hands, and they're totally useless in a snowball fight. Mom said I should wear earmuffs too. But the thing I've learned is that if kids know you can't hear them coming, you're just asking for it. Throat. The reason I get so cold is because I'm skinny and I don't have any insulation. Every winter, I try to eat a lot to give myself an extra layer of blubber, but I guess I've got a fast metabolism because nothing I do ever seems to work. Like putting ice cream on cereal. Nothing. I think it was something like minus 10 degrees outside this morning, and on the walk to school, I started wondering if a person's blood could freeze. I've heard people are something like 60% water, so I guess it's possible. But it kind of feels like something Albert Sandy would make up. What I was worried about the most was frostbite. By the time I was halfway to school, my ears were stinging, and I really wished I had listened to Mom about the earmuffs. I thought one of my ears might actually fall off, and that I wouldn't notice until I was in class. So the teacher would say,
"Mr. Heffley, do you have your homework?"
And I'd say, "Hey," because I wouldn't have an ear. It wasn't just my ears I was worried about, though. Apparently, there are a lot of body parts where you can get frostbite. I wouldn't want to lose my nose, because I'd look a little freaky without one. Then again, my desk in social studies is right next to the bathroom, so at least that situation would get a little better. Couldn't smell it when people came out. Plus, my nose always runs on cold days, and I never realize I've got frozen snot on my face until it's too late. Hey, ladies.
Ew.
I'd like to hang on to my lips, too, because if I didn't have them, it would always look like I was smiling, and in certain situations, that could be a real problem, like funerals.
I'm glad you find this so amusing.
I was lucky I found those gloves, because I wouldn't want to lose any fingers, either. The only thing I'd be willing to give up is my pinky toes, because I hardly ever use them. The last time I can remember using them was when I was in preschool and I needed to count to 20. But other than that, I'm drawing a blank.
18, 19, 20.
I guess a lot of other kids are worried about frostbite too, because when I got to school, there was a whole line of boys in the bathroom waiting to use the hand dryer, and that made me 5 minutes late for first period. It wasn't as windy on the walk home today, but it was just as cold. Me and Rowley stopped at the pizza place again to warm up because Rowley found a coupon for 2 free meatball subs in his coat pocket.
Buon appetito.
Hey. After we left the pizza place, we still had a long way to walk, but that's when I had an idea. My grandma's house is halfway between our school and Surrey Street, and I knew there was no one home. That's because Grandma goes down south each winter and doesn't come back until the spring. During the winter, Grandma sends us pictures of herself and her friends in their bathing suits to let us know that she's having a good time. Grandma takes her dog, Sweetie, with her, too. So, while I'm freezing my butt off up here, it's great to know Sweetie is lying on a beach down south soaking up the sun. Grandma usually keeps a key inside her garden gnome right next to the front door, and sure enough, that's exactly where it was today. I figured we could use Grandma's house to warm up in before the last push home. Rowley was nervous about us going inside with no adults home, But I told him Grandma was family, and she'd want me to use her house while she was away. When we walked in, I was pretty surprised. It was like a freezer in there. So I guess Grandma turns down the thermostat for the winter. Usually, Grandma cranks up the heat. When she's home, it's so warm that you have to eat your ice cream sandwich with the freezer draw open or the ice cream will melt in your hands. The first thing I did when we got inside Grandma's was turn up the thermostat. It was taking a while for the house to heat up, though, so I turned on the oven and we warmed up in a hurry. Grandma had a bunch of snacks in her refrigerator, and me and Rowley helped ourselves. But while we were eating, we saw some movement outside the front window. It was Mrs. McNeil, Grandma's snoopy next-door neighbor. She must have noticed the light from the fridge, and now she was trying to see inside. We stayed out of sight, and eventually Mrs. McNeil went away. But now I knew we had to be careful, because I really didn't need her calling the cops. So we got down low and went into the living room where Grandma has her TV. Grandma has all the cable channels, and luckily she didn't shut those down for the winter. But we couldn't risk attracting Mrs. McNeil again, so we put a blanket over ourselves and the television and watched it that way. I guess we kind of lost track of time, because when we shut off the TV, it was dark out. By now, it was nice and toasty in Grandma's house, and I really didn't want to go back out there in the cold. So I had an idea for how to make the walk home a little more comfortable. I figured if we warmed up our clothes in Grandma's dryer before we headed back out, it would take the edge off for the rest of the trip. So we went down to the basement where Grandma keeps her laundry machines and put in our clothes. We set the timer to 30 minutes and waited, but it was a little awkward hanging out in our underwear while the dryer did its thing. Plus, it was cold in the basement, so we looked around for something to wear. Rowley found a sweatshirt I gave Grandma for her birthday, and he put that on. The sweatshirt said,
"World's Best Grandma."
But I didn't feel right wearing Grandma's clothes. I found a sweater that Grandma knitted for Sweetie, and it fitted better than I expected. But it was a little itchy, and I couldn't remember if Sweetie ever had fleas. But while I was looking around for something to swap with it, we heard noises upstairs. My first thought was that Grandma had given Mrs. McNeil a key to the house, and now she was inside. But Rowley said it might be a burglar who knew no one was at home, and I thought maybe he was right, because we could hear clomp, clomp, clomp. We heard some more stomping around upstairs, and when the door to the basement opened, we both freaked out. I looked around for something to use to defend myself, but the best I could come up with was a toilet plunger. Rowley grabbed a can of lemon dust spray and one of Grandma's handbags, and when we heard footsteps coming down the stairs, we braced ourselves. The footsteps paused when they got near the bottom, and that's when we made our move. It turned out it wasn't Mrs. McNeil, and it wasn't a burglar either. It was Mom. She was there to do a load of laundry since our washing machine at home is broken. Mom didn't say much. She just told us to get our winter clothes back on and to get in the car. And she was totally silent on the drive back to our neighborhood, which was really awkward. I figured that as soon as Rowley was out of the car, Mom was going to yell at me for being at Grandma's house without permission. But she didn't say anything, and she didn't mention it to Dad during dinner either. After I finished doing the dishes, Mom told me she wanted to have a talk in my room. She said it was perfectly normal for boys of my age to play make-believe and that there was nothing to feel ashamed of. Then she said she was glad me and Rowley were using our imaginations instead of playing video games. I have no idea what Mom thought we were doing in Grandma's basement, but to be honest with you, I kind of wish she had just grounded me instead. February, Wednesday. It's been snowing for the past few days, and last night we got another inch and a half. Unfortunately, that wasn't enough to close the school, and even if it snowed more than that, I don't think they would have given us a day off. We only get a certain amount of snow days each year, and if we use them all, then we have to make up for them during the summer holidays. And we've already burned through most of our snow days for this winter, even though some of them technically weren't used because of snow. In December, the school shut down for 3 days because of a lice epidemic. What happened was that Lily Bodner came to school with head lice, but I guess she didn't know, and they spread when she took pictures with her friends. "Smile, girls!" And the head lice go, "Spring, spring, spring." So, if we're sitting in a hot classroom in July, I guess we can all thank Lily for taking selfies. Sometimes, when it snows in the morning, they'll give us a half day, but I'm not a big fan of half days because we still have to walk all that way just to put in a few hours at school. What really stinks is when the school looks at the weather forecast and decides in advance that the next day is going to be a half day. On a half day, the school schedule is the same, but everything takes half the time. That goes for detention, too, and all the bullies in our school know that if they do something bad the day before a half day, they'll only get half the punishment. So they can push and trip and... Sometimes school gets canceled because it's supposed to snow and then it doesn't. That's because the school relies on our local TV weatherman for the forecast, and he's wrong at least 50% of the time. Our weatherman's name is Gary, and sometimes he goofs up. On New Year's Eve, he said it was going to be
T-shirts and shorts weather
the next day. But then it snowed 3 inches. Gary goofs again. And when people saw him at the grocery store, they let him know they weren't happy. Snowball.
Ow.
Honestly, I don't see how this guy still has a job. But I guess as long as people like my parents tune in every night, he's not going anywhere.
I guess I really whiffed on that one, folks.
We love you anyway, Gary,
says Mom. I couldn't find one of my gloves this morning, so I looked for a replacement. I was already running late, so the best I could come up with was a puppet Mom bought to try and get me to eat healthy food when I was younger. She'd hold the puppet on her hand and hold it over the food and say,
Mr. Morsels loves vegetables.
I guess Mom thought that if Mr. Morsels liked vegetables, then I would too. But I used Mr. Morsels to eat my vegetables. And when I found him today in the cupboard, he still had stains on his face from the peas I wouldn't touch in second grade. I know it's kind of ridiculous to wear a puppet as a glove, and I mostly remembered to keep that thing tucked in my coat pocket on the walk to school. But when Cassie Drench rode by in her mom's car, I totally forgot Mr. Morsels was still on my hand, and I waved and said, "Hi," with Mr. Morsels on my hand. Speaking of girls, there's been a big change to the safety patrols in the past few weeks. There used to be a lot of boys on the patrols, but most of them quit or got kicked off before the start of the new year. The last two boys on the patrols were Eric Reynolds and Dougie Finch, who were both captains. But they had their badges taken away in the first week of January when they got into a snowball fight in front of the kindergarten classroom at the elementary school. So now, the safety patrols are 100% girls. And I'll bet they've been planning a takeover for a while. The reason is because the guys at my school can be real jerks, and when it snows, they're really bad. After a while, I'm sure the girls got sick of it, and that's why they put themselves in charge. They just get snowballed all the time. Bap! Now that the girls are in power, they're not messing around. If you throw a single snowball on a school day, the safety patrols will report you to the principal, and it'll get you an automatic suspension. So the girls are just praying one of us guys will step out of line. Today, the road was cleared, but the pavement wasn't. Whenever that happens, me and Rowley just walk in the road. But these new safety patrols are sticklers for the rules, and they won't let us walk in the road, even though they do it. If they see you, they just blow their whistles and point at you. But it's practically impossible to walk on the pavement when it hasn't been plowed, especially when people are clearing their driveways. In fact, it's hard to even know where the pavement is, and this morning I almost busted a kneecap on a fire hydrant that was buried in a snowdrift. Trudge, trudge. Ooh! The thing that really stinks is that the safety patrols make all us guys walk on the pavement, but they let all the girls walk on the road. When me and Rowley got to school today, we were totally wiped out from the trip, but the girls in our class were fresh and ready to go. And if one of them goes on to be president, it's because they got an unfair advantage back in middle school. So our teacher would say things like, "Who would like to come to the board and do this problem?" And the girls would put up their hands, while us guys would just sit there and... I don't really blame the safety patrols for sticking it to the guys in my grade. Most boys are basically savages, and they make civilized guys like me look bad. But with this new safety patrol situation, I've been thinking there might be a way for me to separate myself from those fools. If I can work for the safety patrols, I can stay on their good side, and if I report the troublemakers to the girls, they'll owe me.
Would you like a hot chocolate, Greg?
Sure. For some reason, though, snitching is really frowned on in my school. If you tell on a kid for doing something wrong, then everyone says you're a tattletale, and it's hard to recover from that. But from what I can tell, the only people the no snitching thing helps are the bullies. I'm sure they're the ones who came up with the idea in the first place.
I didn't tattle on you.
Thanks, but I'm still going to hit you with my backpack.
Ooh!
Personally, I don't have any problem with snitching. And apparently, you can make money from being a tattletale. Roderick told me about a guy in his high school who turned out to be a narc, which means the guy pretended to be a high schooler, but was actually a cop in disguise. I've heard about this kind of thing before, and sometimes I wonder if there are narcs in middle school, too. There's a new kid named Shane Browning, who came to our school in the middle of the year, and he looks a lot older than the rest of us. I'm starting to wonder if maybe he's a narc. So, I've been giving him the inside scoop on my classmates just in case he is. Like when I passed him a note that said, Jason Swan is chewing gum in class. Anyway, the snow situation is causing a lot of problems. For the past few days, kids have been wearing their boots in school, and everyone tracks snow through the hallways. So, today, the teachers made everyone take off their boots in the entryway. But the snow on the boots melted and made a giant puddle. Then, kids walked through the puddle on their way to class, and before long, everyone's socks were soaked. One thing led to another, and by third period, it was just complete chaos in the hallways. Everybody was hitting each other with wet socks.
Ow! Stop it!
It got so bad, the teachers had to collect all our socks and keep them in the front office. But a bunch of barefoot middle schoolers isn't such a great thing either. At the end of the day, we all went to the front office to get our socks. But most socks looked the same, so no one could tell which ones belonged to who. Luckily, Jake McGough has a really good sense of smell, and he paired each kid up with their correct socks.
Yours. Yours. Yours.
He even got the socks right for the Garza twins, which you have to admit is pretty impressive. I was glad it was a little warmer on the way home today, since me and Rowley didn't have Grandma's house to use as a pit stop. But that didn't mean the walk home was easy. You're not allowed to throw snowballs on the way home from school, but after you get home, you can do anything you want. So, kids who live close to school have figured out that if they drop their bag off at their house, it counts as being home. Then they come after the kids like me and Rowley, who still have a long way to walk. The safety patrols get ambushed, too. But rules are rules, and they're not allowed to fight back. And they get attacked from both sides. Some of the kids on my hill who get lifts home walk halfway back to school just to get their licks in.
Ow.
It's supposed to snow another few inches tomorrow. I told my parents that I'm saving up for a snowmobile, so getting to school isn't such a hassle on days like today. But Mom and Dad started listing all the reasons why a middle school kid can't have a snowmobile, and after a while, I kind of tuned them out. Anytime I come up with a good idea, my parents shoot it down. They did the exact same thing when I had my dog sled idea last winter. I figured if I bought a few dogs and trained them to pull a sled, getting to school in the morning would be a snap. I guess my parents thought I was joking, though, because they told me I should go for it. But when I used my Christmas money to buy a litter of puppies from the lady up the street, Mom and Dad made me return every last one. Thursday. Today reminded me why the winter is my least favorite time of year. It was another snowy day, but this morning, I decided to do some extra preparation to stay warm on the way to school. Dad lit a fire before he left for work, And I figured I could use it to warm up my coat and boots before I put them on. But I left my boots too close to the fire, and the rubber soles melted into the bricks. So, when it was time to go, they wouldn't budge. Tug, tug. Cool. Rowley was coming to get me at any minute, so I had to figure out something else to wear on my feet. I knew the safety patrols wouldn't let us walk in the road, and my sneakers were going to get soaked if I had to walk through the snow. So, I created my own snowshoes out of pizza boxes and duct tape. And by the time Rowley knocked on the door, I was ready to go. I've got to say, my snowshoes worked even better than I expected. In fact, I was moving along so fast that Rowley had trouble keeping up with me. I'm going skish, 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 and Rowley's going trudge, trudge, trudge. But once we got to the bottom of Surrey Street, things fell apart. The boxes got soggy, and I started sinking into the snow. And then it was even worse than having sneakers on, because now I was dragging these wet boxes along with me. Splurk. Ugh. Splurk. Ugh. Ugh. I knew this wasn't working, so I had Rowley try to help me pull the boxes off my sneakers. But it was practically impossible, because they were double-wrapped in duct tape. Unfortunately, we were right at the edge of the Gooseman's yard, and they've got about 11 dogs. The dogs were curious about what we were doing, and that wasn't helping things either. Then the dogs got aggressive and started fighting over the pizza boxes. That's when I remembered there were a few slices of pizza still in them. The dogs chewed up the pizza boxes and thankfully didn't take off my feet. We got out of there as quick as we could, but my sneakers were getting soaked in the snow. The second I stepped onto the road, though, the safety patrols were right there with their whistles. So I had to just suck it up and walk on the pavement.
Hold it right there. Get back in the pavement.
It didn't take long for the cold to set in. I was worried I could lose my toes if I didn't find a way to warm them up. But the school was still a long way off, and I was desperate. So we stopped every few houses, and I'd shove my feet into a heat vent until I got the feeling back in my toes. We finally made it to school, but it took me a minute to realize it was almost as cold in there as it was outside. Everybody was sitting there going. Apparently, what happened was that the sock smell from yesterday was so strong that it was too much for the night janitor. So, he went around and opened all the windows to let some fresh air circulate. But then, I guess he forgot to close the windows at the end of his shift, and the furnace couldn't keep up, so it shut down. That meant we had a whole day of school with no heat. At first, the teachers let us wear our winter stuff in class. But I guess that was too weird. They couldn't tell who was who, so they changed their minds and made us put our gear in the lockers. In history, we were freezing, but our teacher was just fine. Mrs. Wiley keeps an electric heater next to her desk, and she had that thing cranked up to the max. Halfway through class, a girl named Becky Cosgrove tipped her desk over and started yelling, which was totally random. As punishment, Mrs. Wiley made Becky sit on a chair next to her desk, and it took a minute for the rest of us to figure out what Becky's game was. She sat right next to that heater. But kids in middle school are idiots, and within 30 seconds, everyone was trying to get a seat next to Mrs. Wiley. For the rest of the day, everybody did whatever they could to keep warm, and some kids got pretty creative about it. We had a school play a few weeks ago, and somebody had the bright idea of getting one of the costumes from behind the stage. So he walked around all day looking like a lion. While most of us were freezing our butts off inside, the snow was really piling up outside. And by fourth period, people were freaking out that we were going to be stuck at school overnight. At lunch, kids bought up everything in the cafeteria so they'd have something to eat if we got snowed in. That sent everyone else into a panic, so kids made a run on the vending machines in the hallways, and they were shaking them like crazy. At that point, people were just trying to get their hands on anything that was edible. A rumor spread that there was food in the science lab, so a bunch of kids ran down there. And from what I heard, they picked that place clean. There were exhibits that said things like, how long does it take food to rot? And they had real food sitting there, and they all ate it. Chomp, 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 chomp. I think the principal could see that she was about to have a riot on her hands, so she announced an early home time. Well, that was great news for everyone who took the bus home, but us kids who had to walk didn't have it so easy. I really wasn't looking forward to walking home in a snowstorm, so I came up with an idea. Whirly Street isn't too far from our neighborhood. So I figured me and Rowley could take their bus and then walk the rest of the way. So, after we got out of school, we headed straight for the bus line. And we were so bundled up that nobody even noticed when we got on board. I've got to say, it was kind of weird being on the bus with the Whirly Street kids because those guys are our enemies. They used to sledge in our hill every winter until they discovered the 13th hole at the golf course. The 13th hole is legendary, and everyone knows it's the best sledging hill in our town. But the problem is that the golf course is part of the country club, so if you sledge there, you're trespassing. Last year, I wanted to see what the fuss over the 13th hole was all about, so I got Rowley to come with me. But Rowley was super nervous about the trespassing thing, so he didn't want to go. I had to remind Rowley that he and his family are members of the country club, so technically he wouldn't be trespassing. But I guess Rowley was worried his family might lose their membership if he got caught sledging. So, to disguise himself, he shook his face really fast and kept that up the whole time we were there. I've got to admit, the 13th hole was everything people said it was. It was really steep, and someone built up a mound of snow near the bottom where kids were catching some serious air. We got in a few good runs, but that's when the Whirly Street kids came and kicked everyone else off the golf course so they could have it to themselves. But I was okay with that. As long as those guys aren't causing trouble on our street, they can have the whole golf course for all I care. The bus ride with the Whirly Street kids wasn't a lot of fun, but me and Rowley just tried to keep a low profile so no one would notice us. Which wasn't easy, because those kids are animals. We were almost at Whirly Street when one of the kids at the back did something really dumb. Some fool actually threw a snowball on the bus. The second it happened, the driver pulled over. She said she wasn't moving until the person who threw the snowball turned themselves in. Like I said before, there's a no snitching rule in middle school, so no one from the back of the bus made a peep. I wish I knew who did it, because I would have given them up in a heartbeat. I was pretty sure the bus driver was just bluffing about not moving and that we'd be on our way within a few minutes. But then she broke out a book and started on page 1. So we just sat there and waited for an hour while she read. The worst part about the whole thing was that the bus driver turned off the engine, so there was no heat. And we sat there and froze. There was some conversation going on at the back of the bus, and I think a few kids were trying to get the one who threw the snowball to give himself up. But I really wish I hadn't turned around to look, because when I did, some eighth grader realized I wasn't from Worley Street, and he pointed at me and said, "Hey!" That was all it took. These guys needed someone to take the blame for the snowball, and since I was an outsider, it was a no-brainer for them. And they all pointed at me and said, "He did it.
He did it.
He did it.
He did it. He did it."
The bus driver said I needed to get off the bus immediately. That was fine by me, because now that my cover was blown, I didn't want to stick around any longer than I had to. So I got off the bus, and Rowley was 2 steps behind me. I was pretty sure we were about a mile from Surrey Street. The street we were on didn't have pavements, and there weren't any safety patrols this far out, so we walked on the road. 5 minutes later, we heard angry voices. It was a bunch of Worley Street kids, and they were coming straight for us. First, those idiots lied about me throwing the snowball on the bus. Then they believed their lie, and now they were mad. Me and Rowley had to make a choice. We could either deal with the mob or run. We decided to run. And the only place to go was into the woods. Believe me, that was the last thing I wanted to do. Everyone knows the woods along that road are where the goat man lives. Which is why nobody ever goes in there. Roderick was the first one to tell me about the goat man, who he said was half man, half goat. I wasn't sure if he meant the top half was a goat and the bottom part was a man, or if it was the other way around, but either way, the goat man seemed pretty scary to me. Me and Rowley have argued for years over which version is right. Rowley thinks the goat man is split down the middle, with the left side being man and the right side being goat. I guess Rowley could be right. But if you ask me, I think his version sounds kind of stupid. It's fun talking about this stuff when we're on a sleepover and safe in our sleeping bags. But now that we were in the woods where the goat man actually lives, it was no laughing matter. The Worley Street kids must have known about the goat man too, because when we went into the woods, they didn't follow us. I figured we'd stay in there just long enough for the Worley Street kids to leave, because we didn't want to be in there any longer than we had to. But those guys must have known we were too chicken to stay in there for long, and we could see them waiting for us on the road at the edge of the woods. So our only choice was to go deeper in, and that's what we did. What was weird was how quiet it was in there. After a while, I realized We couldn't hear the cars on the road, and that's when I knew we'd gone in too deep. We followed our footsteps back to the road, but the sun was going down, and it was getting hard to find our tracks. We picked up the pace because we didn't want to get stuck in the woods in the dark. But when we came across a set of tracks, we froze. At first, we thought it was the goat man. But then we realized there were two sets of footprints, and they were ours. That meant we'd spent the past 10 minutes walking in a giant circle. So we turned around and headed in the other direction. But then we ran into a creek, and I knew we were lost. Rowley was panicking, but I wasn't. I knew that if you get lost in the wilderness, as long as you have water, you're fine. I saw a movie where these explorers got trapped in the mountains, but they found a spring and it kept them alive. But then I remembered that when they got desperate, they had to eat their pack animals. I just hoped things didn't reach that point for us. I figured if we followed the creek, it might lead us somewhere, and at least we wouldn't get lost again. But when we came across a beaver dam, Rowley started freaking out. Rowley said that beavers are dangerous, and that he saw a show on TV where a beaver attacked a person. But Rowley's an idiot. The show he was talking about was a cartoon, and I was actually with him when he watched it. The cartoon beaver hit the hunter with his tail. Still, I couldn't convince Rowley to stay near the creek, so we had to turn round again, and by now it was really dark. After walking a few more minutes, something bright caught my eye. I thought maybe it was the headlights from a car, and we ran towards it. It turned out the light was coming from a car, but it was just a rusty piece of junk in the middle of the woods, and what caught my eye was the reflection of the moon on the bumper. When my eyes adjusted to the light, I realized there were a lot of abandoned cars and trucks all around us. I saw something shiny sitting on a stump, and I picked it up. The thing was cold and metal, and when I held it up to my face to take a closer look, I knew exactly what it was. It was a belt buckle, and it belonged to Meckley Mingo, and it had a deer skull on it. That meant me and Rowley were smack in the middle of the Mingo's camp. People in my town have always wondered where the Mingos live, and now me and Rowley had stumbled into their headquarters. I thought we were lucky because at least there was no one there, but when I turned to leave, something grabbed my hand. Well, technically, something grabbed Mr. Morsels. I thought for sure it was Meckley Mingo, and he was going to kill me for touching his belt buckle. Thankfully, I was wrong. The puppet was snagged on a truck's door handle, so I tried to pull it free. That's when we heard noises coming from inside the truck. I realized I had to choose between saving myself and saving a puppet. And it was no contest. Run, run, run. Me and Rowley tore out of there. But when we were a good distance away from the Mingo's camp, we heard a sound that made my blood run cold. I didn't know if it was the goat man or the Mingo kids. All I knew for sure was that if we stopped running, we'd be dead. I could hear shouting behind us, and it was getting closer. But just when it felt like the voices were right on top of us, we broke through the trees and into the open. Luckily, Dad was paying attention, or me and Rowley would have been roadkill. But at least it would have been over quick, because if the Mingos had caught us, I'm sure they would have taken their time. Friday. When I woke up this morning, I was totally exhausted. My legs felt like rubber from all that running yesterday, and I barely got any rest because I had a nightmare the Mingos were chasing me. They had sticks and clubs and a horn trumpet. I was going to tell Mom I couldn't go to school today, but when I looked out of the window, I realized I didn't have to. It had snowed at least 5 inches overnight, which meant school was closed. So I was looking forward to a nice, relaxing day of doing absolutely nothing. Mom and Dad were already gone, and Manny was at nursery. Roderick usually sleeps past 1 p.m. on snow days, so I more or less had the whole house to myself. I went downstairs to get a bowl of cereal and turn on the TV, but there was something wrong with the remote. Press, press, nothing. I noticed it felt a little light, so I opened up the back of the remote to see if there was a missing battery. It turns out there weren't any batteries inside, but there was a note from Mom. It said, "To get the batteries for the remote, load the dishwasher." Ugh. I really didn't feel like doing chores on a snow day, so I looked around the house for some batteries I could put in the remote. But Mom must have known I'd do that because there wasn't a spare battery anywhere. I couldn't figure out how Mom was going to know I'd loaded the dishwasher since she wasn't even home. But when I put in the last plate and shut the door, I found something. It was another note with a battery tape to it. And the note said,
"Congratulations! Clean the downstairs bathroom to get your next battery."
Ugh. I didn't like where this was heading. The TV remote takes 4 batteries, and at this rate, I was going to burn through my whole day doing chores. But then I realized I didn't have to. The remote in Mom and Dad's bedroom is really skinny, and I was pretty sure it only took 1 battery. And it turned out I was right. I knew I was going to have to finish all the chores before Mom and Dad got home, but I figured I had plenty of time, and I deserved to enjoy myself for a little while. So I made myself comfortable on their bed and turned on the TV. Ordinarily, I get a little weirded out being in Mom and Dad's bed, but today I decided to make an exception, especially when I realized one of their blankets was the one we got from Aunt Dorothy for Christmas. Watching TV in bed was awesome, or at least for a while. I was comfortable for the first 2 hours, but after that, my neck started hurting from lying in that position. I've already decided that when I get a place of my own, I'm going to attach my TV to the ceiling so I can look straight up at it. But I'm going to get someone who knows what they're doing to install the TV because I don't need to be the next Flat Stanley.
"But Marissa, I love you."
I must have dozed off for a while, because when the phone rang, it startled me. It was Mom, and I figured she was checking up on me to see if I'd finished my chores. But the reason she was calling was to tell me she couldn't make it home in time to pick Manny up from nursery, so she was gonna have Mrs. Drummond drop Manny off at the house. That meant I had to babysit, which was gonna really mess up the rest of my day. When Mrs. Drummond dropped Manny off half an hour later, I didn't know what to do with him. I put him in Mom and Dad's room and turned on some cartoons, but he followed me back downstairs, so I guess Manny just wanted to be with me. I tried to remember what Roderick used to do with me when I was little, but all I could think of was the time he gave me lemon juice and told me